Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we got another UFC event this weekend. I'm pretty sure we actually have UFC events every single week out until April. Maybe, I mean, we're pretty poised for a massive, massive run in the first quarter of 2025. Wow, 2025, weird to say that. But on today's episode, of course, we have our UFC Vegas 102 predictions, Jared Cannonier versus Gregory Rodriguez, an interesting fight night. And you know what? For being an Apex card, it's not that bad. We have some hidden gems on this card. We've got a lot of underdogs I'm going to be betting. You already know it's going to be a fun time. We'll be dropping our full card preview and predictions on today's episode. No new UFC news or any new headlines in pop culture, as we truly, I tell you, haven't had anything drop in the last few days since I last recorded. So we'll put that off until next week. But what we will be looking at is the NBA and NHL current standings before they both go on their all-star breaks. Or for NHL, double doing their, what is it, four country tournament or something. There's, I don't know what's going on. We might discuss that a bit. Also, going to be reviewing the hit movie Gladiator 2. I finally got around to seeing it, and had I seen it in 2024, you best bet it would have made my top 10 list for the year. So we got lots to talk about, a lot of fun stuff. It's currently 9 in the morning as I'm recording this, and I've been up since 4:30. It's been a buzzin' Wednesday, let me tell you. Let's get right on into it. Starting off this episode, let's look at the current state of the NBA. And the NBA is just about to go into their All-Star weekend. They've all had about 53, 52, 54 games played. And here are the current standings for each conference. First off, in the Eastern Conference, the second best team in the league. I mean, truly, there is one best team in both conferences. And the second best team in the league is the top team in the East. That is the Cleveland Cavaliers. 3-game win streak, 7-3 in their last 10. And outstanding 25-4 at home, and they're 43-10. There's only two teams in the 40-win category, and the Cavs are one of them. It's been a pretty good season for the Cavs. I mean, this roster has finally been able to click and put things together. Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jarrett Allen. You've just built this fantastic team here, and you also have some veteran presence in Tristan Thompson, Caris LeVert. I mean, Isaac Okoro, whenever he's in, is good. Young players like Emmanuel Bates, JT Thor. You know, it's a pretty well-rounded unit in Cleveland, and they've been good so far. And we'll just see how they do in the playoffs, because they don't really strike me as a team that will go far in the playoffs. I could see a round one win, since they'll be playing someone like the Bulls, Magic, Hawks. But in terms of round two, and you have to take on teams like the Pacers, the Bucks, the Knicks even per se, it's going to get a bit more tricky. But Cavaliers to start off the year have been outstanding. In second right now, you got the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics, Boston with that accent. 38-16, the reigning champs are going into the All-Star break on a 2-game winning streak. I believe, actually, you know, they play again. I think, when do final games start? Or not final games. Okay, so tomorrow, when I'm recording this on the 12th, so the 13th, so when you're actually listening to this, will be the final day of games before the All-Star break. And then All-Star weekend is actually Sunday. They're doing everything Sunday. Oh, I guess Friday too, but I guess they're getting right on into it. Then, of course, they give them a little game break or two. I think it's like a week off or something. I mean, fantasy basketball, I've been completely revitalizing my team. I'm now in the playoff hunt for the top 4 spots. That's a whole nother story. But Celtics, 38-16. They're 28-9 in their conference. Not too bad. 22-6 on the road, I do want to point out. That's pretty stellar. Knicks in third, 35-18. I mean, what more do you want from this team? The Karl Anthony Towns trade has benefited the Knicks way more than it's benefited the Minnesota Timberwolves. Let me tell you that. 8-2 in their last 10. Knicks are playing great basketball. Pacers at 29-23. They're in fourth, are on a little 2-game skid, but that's okay. Bucks at 28-24. You know, Giannis has been out, so tough luck for them. Pistons, 28-26. 3-game win streak. This team was awful last year. They were so freaking bad, but now this team has completely turned things around. Cade Cunningham, Jalen Duren, Malik Beasley, Asir Thompson. I mean, this team is so young, yet they're so freaking good. And Tobias Harris and Isaiah Stewart, they can tear it up. You even got Tim Hardaway Jr. chilling on the bench. I mean, that's a great guy to have coming off the bench. Pistons having great. Heat at 25-26. It's pretty interesting. Jimmy Butler has now left them, and they have not improved at all. 2-game losing streak. I don't know what to say for this Heat team. They got Tyler Hero. They got Bam Adebayo. They got Jimmy Jack West Jr., but it's just not clicking right now. Really got to figure that out come playoff time. Hawks at 8. They're 26-28. Three-game win streak. Good for Trae Young. Kind of a rough unit, though. Zachariah Richard is just, you know, really coming into himself. You know, not necessarily the most dominant number one pick, but left. So here was he, number two. Him and Alex, sorry, I always get them mixed up. Magic at 9, 26-29. Bulls at 10th. 76ers at 11. They're on a four-game losing streak. It's been awful. It's been awful to be a 76ers fan. They were actually booing them in their loss last night. You hate to see that. Nets are at 19-34. They're at 12th. Raptors in 13th, 17-37. I actually did get a win last night. Good enough for them. I actually predicted it. They were like plus 465. Threw a little money down on them. Obviously not real money. I use fake betting money because my real money, I just never do well with. So there's that. Hornets in 14th have not improved at all from last year. And the Wizards, 9-44, have almost broken into the double-digit win category. But 3-7 in the last 10, three-game losing streak. They have 7 wins at home. Actually, they have 5 wins at home, 4 wins on the road. All 7 of their 9 wins have came in their conference. Yikes. Pretty rough stuff. I mean, it's been pretty clear that the Cavs, Celtics, Knicks can maybe sprinkle in the Pacers and Bucks in there, but definitely the top three teams have separated themselves from the rest. I do want to point out that the play-in games, the number 10, 9, 8, and it will the 7 spot, are all having a negative record right now in the East. The East is not necessarily the best conference compared to the West, but you know what? You have the second half of the season to see what happens. Moving on to the Western Conference, the best team in the league and the best team in the West, the Oklahoma City Thunder. 43-9, 6-game winning streak. I mean, 8-2 in the last 10. They're 24-3 at home. They're so freaking good. This Thunder team is just so freaking good. They're loaded. Chet Holmgren, Jalen Williams, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Isaiah Hartenstein, Jalen Williams, Aaron Wiggins, Alex Caruso. This team is just loaded with dogs, and they are young. They're young. Their average age is like 24 or something. I don't know if that's actually accurate, but I'm pretty sure I saw that somewhere. They've been fantastic. And number two, this one surprised me. The Grizzlies, the Memphis Grizzlies, 36-17. I guess with a healthy Ja Morant, they're absolute killers. Holy cow, 21-6 at home. They've been great. Nuggets in third, 35-19. 7-game win streak for them. They've been on a roll. What more do you want from the Nuggets? Won the chip 2 years ago, and they've been just as good since. Or they won it last year. Actually, did the Nuggets win it last year? Honestly, I have a very short memory when it comes to how teams have done in the past. But look, this Nuggets team, they've retained pretty much everyone from that championship team, and they've been playing some great, great basketball. In fourth, I don't even know how this is allowed, but the Lakers, 6-game win streak, 9-1 in their last 10. They're 32-19, and they have Luka Doncic. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? How have we given the number four team in the West the number one player in the league? I don't even understand that. But Lakers, they've been on a roll. 13-13 on the road compared to 19-6 at home is very telling that they have way more success when they're in LA compared to anywhere else in the country. But we'll just leave that there. The Lakers may be the front runner to make the NBA Finals. Rockets in fifth, 33-20. I've used the comparison once. I'll use it tons and tons of time again. This is the Washington Commanders of the NBA. They were awful last year, and now they're really freaking good this year. Dude, Rockets, good for them. I love them back when James Harden played. We'll see how they do come playoff time. Clippers in sixth, 29-23. You already know how good the LA Clippers are. They're stellar. And number seven, my Timberwolves, 30-24. You know, we are plus 6 in terms of win total. We'll take it. But I mean, 50-12 at home, 50-12 on the road. We are just about the same level wherever we play. Anthony Edwards is the best player in the league. Okay. The rest of the team, not so much. He's dropping 44. We're losing by 8. What are we doing? Really hoping they can put something together come playoff time, but this trade for Julius Randle, just not working out. Mavericks, they're still in 8th, even though they just lost Anthony Davis for a couple weeks. Don't know why you trade Luka Doncic. I don't know what you were thinking. Dallas Mavericks, that's all I gotta say. Kings in 9th, they're decent. Warriors in 10th now of Jimmy Butler. Pretty weird to see Stephen Curry and Jimmy Butler on the same team. That makes no sense. Jimmy Butler and Andrew Wiggins reunited, though. Did they play together when he was in Minnesota? I don't know, but now they're together on the Warriors. Suns are in 11th. They're on a 2-game losing streak, though. Kevin Durant, he just joined the 30,000-point scored club, so good for Kevin. And number 12, you have the Spurs, 23-28. We'll see if they can make a late-season turnaround since they have De'Aaron Fox now. Trailblazers in 13th. Little hope for them. Jazz in 14th. And the Pelicans, 12-41, are on a 9-game losing streak. At this rate, the Wizards are going to pass the Pelicans in terms of not the worst team in the league. So I guess the Pelicans would pass the Wizards for being the worst team in the league. But the NBA rolls along. Interesting stuff. All I'm going to say is that I'm rooting for the Minnesota Timberwolves, but at times they make it hard when all they do is just lose close games. Well, I'll see what happens as the rest of the year rolls on. But as of now, Thunder and Cavs leading the league. Switching over from the court to the ice as we look at the NHL. And I think it's called the Four Seasons Tournament or something. The Four Nations face off. That's what it is. Four Nations. You have Sweden, you have Canada, you have the United States, and you have, is it the Czech Republic? I want to say, I'm trying to think. Is it the Czech Republic? Czech Republic would kind of make sense. I don't know how many players you actually have, but NHL has been much better in terms of NBA when it comes to a Minnesota team, as the Wild, they've been doing pretty good. And the Wild are usually pretty good. We'll check them with them last, but let's look at the Eastern Conference first. First off, in the Atlantic Division, Panthers, 71 points on the year. They are second in the East and first in the Atlantic Division. Two-game win streak for them, 34-20-3. They've been playing fantastic. Also in the 60-point club, you got the Maple Leafs at 33-20-2. Tampa Bay Lightning, 31-20-4. Senators, 29-23-4. And even at the Red Wings, 28-22-5. Oh, the Bruins, 27-24-6. They've all got some decent records. Lightning are on a four-game winning streak. Senators on a three-game losing streak. It's been pretty interesting. Sabres are worst team in the East with a 22-27-5 record. So, not too bad. Best team in the East, though, is the Capitals. Washington Capitals, 36-11-8. They are in the 80-point club. Are they the best team in the league? Ooh, they're second best team in the league. Pretty similar to the NBA in terms of the top two teams. Capitals are coming off a loss, but I mean, you're still 10 points ahead of the next closest person in your division. Canes are 33-19-4 with 70. Worst team in the conference is the Sabres, but for the division, Flyers 24-26-7. Very interesting. Nothing too much here. Blue Jackets are on a four-game losing streak. I don't know too much about hockey, but in terms of the Eastern Conference, your top eight teams as of right now, you've got the Capitals at one in the East, Panthers at 2, Hurricanes at 3, Maple Leafs at 4, Devils at 5, Lightning are at 6, Senators at 7, and you have the Red Wings in there at 8, but the Blue Jackets and Bruins hot on their tail. We'll see how the rest of the season winds up for these teams, but I kind of like what the NHL is doing, kind of mixing up their All-Star Weekend, because their All-Star Weekend is never really that interesting. Instead, they're having, I think, all the best players from the United States, Sweden, Canada, and is it the Czech Republic? I really feel like it's the Czech Republic, all facing off in sort of this nation versus nation, and I like the idea. I really like the idea. I'll root for the United States, but honestly, Team Canada is really sticking out to me. We'll have to see. I obviously got to root for my American boys, but Team Canada, they bring in some good hockey players. I know that for a fact. Let's jump over to the Western Conference as the best team in the league is the Winnipeg Jets, 39-14-3 with 81 points, and they're on a 8-game winning streak. Good stuff for the Winnipeg Jets. Sadly, that's in the Wild's division. Stars are second in the Central Division, and Wild are in third. But the Wild are currently in the playoff hunt, so no need to worry about that. In fact, the Central Division has only one team, and that's the Chicago Blackhawks, who is not on a winning streak or coming off a win. That's pretty incredible when you have eight teams in your division, and all of them but one are coming off of a win. Good for them. Blackhawks are currently the second worst team, not only in their conference, but in the league with only 41 points on the year, 17-31-7. They have improved not one bit from last year. Oh my gosh, absolutely awful. Minus 42 point differential, second worst point differential in the league. Oof, just rough to be a Chicago Blackhawks fan. The Utah Hockey Club, they're at 57 points with a 24-23-9 record. Good for them. Avalanche, hot on the tails of the Wild at 68 points. They got only 24 losses compared to 33 wins. Let's look at the Pacific Division real quick, as the Edmonton Oilers currently lead it. Golden Knights hot on their tail, both of them with 72 points. 34 wins for the Oilers, 33 for the Golden Knights. Kings coming off a loss. Canucks on a three-game win streak, and the worst team in the league for another year, the San Jose Sharks, 15-35-7. They have a minus 68 point differential with four straight losses, and are actually 1-8-1 in their last 10. huh, I don't know what to do if you're the Sharks and the Blackhawks. You really got to evaluate your entire franchise, because right now you guys, both of these teams used to be teams that made it to the Stanley Cup Finals, and now they are honestly just terrible, terrible watches. But in terms of top eight teams in the division, Jets are one, Stars coming in at two, Oilers at three, Golden Knights at four, Wild coming in at five, you got the Avalanche at six, Kings at seven, and the Canucks in at eight, but the Flames hot on their tail with the 60 points. They're in the 60-point club. Good for them. The NHL season winds on. I'll be very interested to see how it wraps up, similar to the NBA. Lots going to change. Lots going to change. And compared to the NBA, I mean, the NHL standings, all these teams are right at around 56, 57, 55 games. So they're just a game or two ahead of the NBA. So I think the NHL season will end before the NBA's. But it's looking like the Wild and the Timberwolves are both going to make the playoffs. Love to see that. I don't know who they'd be matched up with. I think the Timberwolves, if they were to just make it right now, they'd be matched up with the Grizzlies. They may actually have to play in the play-in if they're currently the seventh seed, so we really want to get that sixth seed and play someone like the Rockets, per se, or even the Nuggets I'd play in the first round. For the Wild, I don't know how it works, but if it's going similar to the NBA's, where we're going to be coming in as the third or fourth seed, we're probably going to be taking on a team like the Kings, the Canucks, maybe even the Avalanche, which I would be not happy about because the Avalanche are a rival of ours. But I don't know. Interesting stuff in the NHL. Of course, I root for the Wild because I don't really have another team. Blackhawks suck, and my whole family is Blackhawks fans. But that's all we got for the NBA and NHL. But there's much more to life than sports, guys. There's also movies, and I watched an absolutely fantastic movie with my good buddy Ryan, who we've had on the podcast, episode 157, I think it was, when we did conspiracy theories. Great episode. You should go listen to that. But we watched Gladiator 2 the other night, and I knew I just had to talk about it on the podcast. And right now, 71% Rotten Tomatoes, 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb. This gets a solid 8 for me on the movie scale. This movie had everything. It truly had everything. The one issue I'll say with this is that it just, I mean, this is really an issue. It's just more of a critique, is that it was never going to live up to Gladiator. Gladiator is in a whole different class of its own in terms of legendary movies, and trying to reciprocate it, what, 20, 30 years later, it was never going to work. But they still did a pretty stellar job. One other minor critique I have, it's honestly my last one. I get people mention historical inaccuracies, but I could care less about that. I'll just say is that we had a lot of deaths of key characters in this film, and they never really gave us a chance to get emotionally connected. The deaths kind of happened pretty quick, and I just think there wasn't really that emotional element there. I mean, we even have characters from the past film that pass away, and it just happened so sudden, we don't even have time to mourn them. But other than that, I mean, pretty good film. You had great battle sequences. The film starts with a great water battle as the Romans are attacking this African city of Numeria. That's where we're introduced to Lucius, who's known as Hanan, obviously. Obviously, we come to learn that he's Maximus's son, for goodness sake. You also have Pedro Pascal as this Roman war general leader, who we think is going to be a villain and turns out to be kind of a, I don't want to say like an anti-hero, or I don't even know what he was, but he was great in this film. Of course, I don't want to give away any spoilers, but him and Lucius's battle is probably the best hand-to-hand combat you'll see in the entire film. Excellent job played by the two villains in this film, Geta and Caracalla, of course, played by, oh my gosh, one of the actors. He was in Stranger Things. He was Eddie from Stranger Things. Joe something? He was also in A Quiet Place Day One. He was fantastic in this, I want to say. He was really good playing a villain. You really just hated the villains. Like, they didn't have to be evil. They were just so annoying and just uppity. It was just, ugh, just disgusting. Denzel Washington also was fantastic in this. Not to really give away too much of a spoiler, but I mean, from the get-go, you can kind of tell that he's not a hero, but I mean, he was still fantastic in this role as he played a villain towards the end. You had some great sequences in the Colosseum with a rhino. You had a sharks in there. You had this crazy sequence at the end where Lucius kind of rallies all the troops and they all go in and storm it of sorts, and then you have this epic scene at the end where there's two just thousands of armies going at each other, and Lucius is able to rally them all to his cause. It was intense. Okay, it was really good. And this is a movie I felt would have been really good on the big screen. It was kind of, you know, for being 2 hours and 28 minutes, there was one point where I kind of like checked the time. I was like, okay, Are we going to be getting to something soon? And you never really know where the movie's going. I'll say that's one of the benefits of it. I know some people are like, oh, I really like to know where a movie's going. But one thing I liked about this is you never really knew the direction. You didn't know what the climax was going to be. You can kind of tell where the climax of the film is, but then where are we going to go with the third act? What's going to happen in there? And that's where it's really good. And it kind of ends, oh, setting up a third film. You know, Gladiator 1 didn't really set up a second film, but I guess Gladiator 2 could set up a third film. I just think we leave it here. I think this is just one of those things sort of similar to Alien Romulus where you can reciprocate. I don't think this is as good as Alien Romulus in terms of following up its predecessor, but I think you can do it to a point where if we don't have another movie, I'm content with what we got. The cast was phenomenal. I'll say that for starters. If I could actually get a cast list here, courtesy of Wikipedia, because I want to know the name that I was thinking of. You have Paul Mescal as the lead in this. I thought was brilliant. Pedro Pascal is always brilliant. Connie Nielsen returning as Lucilla. Denzel Washington. We had Joseph Quinn. That's who it was. Joseph Quinn stars as Emperor of Rome, and his brother Fred Hengenker, who played, I don't know, anything that he starred in. Josef Lior Rose as Vigo. He plays kind of like this villain. Who am I thinking of? Rory McCain, of course, the Hound from Game of Thrones, was actually a former gladiator or something. Was he a general? I don't know, but he was like the leader of some army, and it was cool to see him because Ryan pointed out, he's like, you know who that is? I'm like, no, and then I heard his voice. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the Hound from Game of Thrones. It's Gregor Clegane. He's back. So it was really fun. Good movie. I recommend it for sure. And I also started Severance Season 2, which has turned out to be pretty freaking good. Also, Ted Lasso, I gotta start. There's tons of things we got to review, but that's all we got for the movie Gladiator 2. 8 out of 10 for me. I recommend it. You can even watch it with your family. Good little family movie. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's dive right into the main topic, the final main event, whatever you want to call it, the our climax, our third act of this podcast episode, and that is your UFC Vegas 102 predictions. Wow, 102 Vegas, oh my gosh, I thought we were done with the Apex. Turns out we're just getting started. We got at least five more Apex events this year. Ridiculous. But we got some good fun fights on this card. So let's dive into them, drop our predictions, and analyze each fight for UFC Vegas 102. Kicking off Saturday's card, we head to the women's bantamweight division as we get some ranked women to kick off the card. Always a good sign. As the number 12 ranked Julian Avila takes on the number 13th ranked Jacqueline Cavalcante. Julia Raging Panda Avila. What a nickname there. What a nickname for Julia, the Raging Panda. How fun. Julia's coming into this one 9-3. Jacqueline is 8-1. 5'7" to 5'8" gives Jacqueline 1 inch in height. And she also has 2 inches in reach for Jacqueline with a 70-68 reach advantage, or 2 inches in reach, I should better say. Orthodox stance for both of these ladies. Julia plus 310 is a massive, massive underdog for this contest. Jacqueline's coming into this one minus 420. Minus 420 for all of our weed smokers out there. She is a mighty, mighty big favorite, if I don't say so myself. Let's kick things off with Julia. Julia is 36 years old, born in LA, but now lives and trains out of Oklahoma City. She actually went to Notre Dame for college. Fun fact, if you didn't know that. Out of her 9 career victories, she has 4 knockouts and 2 subs, and out of her 3 losses, she has been finished twice. Both of those losses have came by submission, I want to say. Last time she fought was December 2023 when Misha Tate submitted her in round number 3, and she got dominated in that matchup. Her last win came in June of 2021 when she beat Julia Storia-Lenko. It's been, you know, 3-2 in the UFC for Julia Avila. Very average run, I'll say. Somehow is ranked at 12. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. She couldn't stand with anyone in the top 5 of the women's division. Julia, it's unfortunate where you're at in your career, but, you know, this is where you can bounce back with a win over Jacqueline Cavalcante. Jacqueline is 27 years old, and with a 8-1 record, she is on a 6-fight winning streak. She was born in Brazil, but now she fights out of Portugal. Of her 8 wins, 3 knockouts. So Jacqueline is 3-0 in the UFC, all of those by decision. And her last 2 by split decision, went 2-0 in 2024 with those 2 split decisions. It's tough to know what you're going to get with Jacqueline Cavalcante. And she's ranked number 13 right now. She was able to get that ranking spot with a win over Nora Cornoli in September. I don't know. It's always a toss-up with these women's bantamweight matchups, especially compared to any of the other women's fights on the card. If it was up to me, if it was up to me, if I was the decision maker, if I had to choose who I think will win, I am going to go with Jacqueline Cavalcante. Look, she's younger. She's on a better win streak. She's gotten a win more recently. In fact, she's fought more recently, for goodness sakes. We're going to go with her to move up to the number 12 spot in the women's bantamweight division. But this is 50-50. Okay, you never know with these women fights, especially at plus 310. I would not be mad, you know, if someone dabbled a little money on that. Personally, I'm not. I'm riding with Jacqueline easily by decision. That's what we're going to go with. Keeping the card moving, we head to the men's heavyweight division. And son of a gun, we have ranked heavyweight action as the number 15th ranked heavyweight, Dontell Mays. That's right, Dontell Mays is ranked in the men's heavyweight division. Oh, are you kidding me? That makes absolutely no sense. But, you know, it is what it is. Lord Kong is his nickname. Dontell Lord Kong Mays. How fun. As he takes on Walter the Clean Monster Walker. 11-7 with one no contest is the career record for Dontell Mays. 12-1 is the record for Walter Walker. 6'6" for both of these men. An 81-inch reach compared to a 78-inch reach gives Dontell 3 inches in reach. And an orthodox fighting position is what both men love to stand. And yeah, Dontell, he's ranked 15th for some reason. They cut someone. Who did they cut? I honestly can't recall, but I don't know. We'll see how this one goes. It's the prelims, for goodness sake. 33 years old from Albuquerque, 4 knockouts and 3 subs make up those 11 wins of his 7 losses, 1 knockout and 2 submission losses for Dontell Lord Kong Mays. Plus 150, he is the underdog. The favorite, Walter Walker, 27 years old from Rio, but now is, of course, training out of Moscow, if anyone's heard of that. He has a lot of finishes. 6 knockouts, 2 subs in those 12 wins, which is pretty good overall. It'll be an interesting contest, that's for sure. I feel like these heavyweight matchups are always sloppy, and it's going to be a sloppy matchup for sure in this one. Sloppy is actually not the right term I want to use. That kind of sounds a bit weird, if you ask me. Dontell, coming into this one, is coming off a loss to Shamil Gaziev in 2024, and this dude has gone win-loss for the longest amount of time, debuting in the UFC in 2019 after 3 different appearances on Dana White's Contender Series. He's fought in Ciryl Gane, Rodrigo Nascimento, Augusto Sakai, Andre Arlovsky, but his last win did come in April of last year when he beat Kyle Machado. Dontell is just an average run-of-the-mill heavyweight. You know, sometimes he grapples, sometimes he strikes. Last time out, he was kind of exposed for not having the best of grappling against Shamil Gaziev. We'll see if he can bounce back here against the younger brother of Johnny Walker. That is none other than Walter Walker. With that 12-1 record, this will be his 3rd contest in the UFC. He lost his debut and his first professional fight to Lucas Brzezinski last year. I actually thought he won that. He followed that up with a round-1 heel hook of Junior Tafa, so he's coming in with a little bit of momentum. For this contest, I think what you're going to see is that Walter's going to want to get this to the ground, and Dontell Mays is going to want to keep this on the feet. So if Walter can take it to the ground, this is going to be a submission win for Walter Walker. But if Dontell can keep it on the feet, land some hard punches, he will get a knockout. If you're going to go off of underdogs, Dontell Mays is a beautiful prediction here, but I'm going to go off what I've seen more recently, and that's that Walter Walker has very good grappling. I think he's finally adjusted to the UFC's level of competition, and I'm going to pick Walter Walker to get another round-1 submission. I honestly think he takes him down and gets a rear naked choke, an arm triangle or something. I'm pretty confident for Walter Walker going into this one, following his brother's footsteps, getting into the rankings. And speaking of Johnny Walker, ranked number 10, get that man a fight. I mean, come on, goodness me. But yes, we're going to go with Walter Walker. It's the heavyweights on the prelims. You never know what you're going to get. I hope for some excitement. That's what we're going to go with. Keeping the card moving along, we head to the men's bantamweight division as Vince Morales takes on Elijah Smith. Vince Vendetta Morales takes on Elijah Swift Smith. He's got some fun nicknames in this one. Vince Morales, 16-8. Elijah, 7-1. 5'9" to 5'7". Elijah has 2 inches in height and 1 inch reach. 71-70. Orthodox stance for both of these gentlemen. Let's start with Vince Morales. Vince, plus 190 is his underdog's position. Minus 250 for Elijah. 34 years old from Oregon, 7 knockouts and 5 subs, so 12 finishes and 16 wins. He does have 3 of his 8 losses. He's been finished 3 times, once by knockout, twice by submission. And coming into this one, I mean, tough loss to Taylor Lapalouse in Paris. Kind of got dominated in that one. And he is on a 3-fight losing streak. Last win came in 2021 against Luis Smoka, for goodness sake. Now, he has been taking on some tough competitors. I mean, let's not act like Jonathan Martinez, Miles Johns, and Taylor Lapalouse are not bad competitors. And he was never finished in any of those matchups. It's been a stellar run for Vince Morales. I think he's just had a rough go with things. He's had to fight Song Yadong, Ayman Zahabi, Chris Gutierrez, Jonathan Martinez, like I mentioned, Taylor Lapalou. So he's finally taking on a young, hungry up-and-comer in Elijah Swift-Smith. So this could be an excellent opportunity for him to bounce back. But will he? Because Elijah Smith is a game competitor. 22 years young. That's right. He's the same age as me. With a 7-1 record, he rides a 5-fight winning streak from Colorado. 5 finishes in those 7 wins, 4 knockouts and 1 sub. And his lone loss is by knockout. He won his Dana White's Contender Series matchup by unanimous decision as he took on Aaron Towney. Leaned on the grappling. And that one, I'll say he leaned on the grappling. Now, there's been a trend this year of undefeated fighters losing, and thankfully, Elijah Smith is not undefeated. So unlike Cody Steele, unlike Umar Nurmagomedov, unlike, who was another good one? Oh my gosh, who was the guy from Japan? I'm trying to think of his name, and it's eluding me. Rinya Nakamura, there it is. Unlike those guys who are undefeated, Elijah already has a loss on his record. So I think Elijah finds some success here, gets a win on the prelims, and might even get a little knockout here. We'll have to see, but I'm going to go decision for right now just because that's what I saw in Dana White's Contender Series, but Elijah Smith will be our prediction for this matchup. I think it should be a decent contest. I'm just hoping Elijah Smith can actually land a debut because right as of right now, it has been hard to kind of break through this year. I'll say that for certain in terms of UFC newcomers getting into the roster. Next up on the docket is a welterweight matchup between Gabriel Maratina Bonfim and Chaos the Ox Fighter Williams. Chaos Williams back in action. 16-1 for Gabriel Bonfim and 15-3 for Chaos Williams. 6'1 to 6', Gabriel's won tonight. And a notable, very notable, 5-inch reach advantage for Chaos Williams. 77-72, orthodox stance for both of these welterweights. Let's start with the favorite, Gabriel Bonfim, who's minus 225. Chaos is plus 185. Gabriel, 27 years old, from Brazil. 3 knockouts and 12 subs. That's right. He's only ever won one fight by decision. Every other fight he has finished. He was actually supposed to fight Renat Fakhretdinov on this card, but unfortunately, Renat pulled out to everyone's dismay because Renat Fakhretdinov is someone who has so much potential, but just can't get a fight to save his life. Gabriel, you know, 3-1 in the UFC. His lone loss is a fight of the night to Nicholas Dalby, where he was upset. I think he's pretty talented. All right, his lone fight in 2024 got a decision win. I mean, I think he was just worried about losing again, but I mean, 27 years old. He actually has his brother fighting later on in the card. We're going to mention that in a second. He's talented. He's very talented, but he is much more of a grappler. You're going to notice those 12 submission wins, a lot of guillotines. You'll notice arm triangles. His opponent does not dabble in that affair. Chaos Williams is a knockout artist through and through. The underdog was born in Indiana, but now is from Detroit. 7 knockouts and 9 subs make up his 15 career victories, and he's never been finished in all 3 of his losses. Chaos currently rides a 2-fight winning streak, and most recently in May of last year, he got a round 1 90-second knockout of Carlson Harris. Absolutely dominant. Last loss came to Randy Brown, and the loss before that, Michelle Parra. So he's only lost to some really tough competitors in the men's welterweight division. Also has knockouts of Miguel Beza, Abdulrazak Al-Hassan, and Alex Morono. And he's known as the guy who in his first 2 UFC fights had 2 knockouts combined, 57 seconds. Okay, a 27-second and a 30-second. So Chaos Williams is a knockout master. Where I've seen maybe a bit of caution was the Michelle Parra loss where he was out grappled, but he hasn't really faced grappling like that in a long time. I don't know. I don't know for this one because Gabriel Bonfim is the favorite. I would love to pick Chaos Williams. But if Gabriel can keep this off the feet, he'll find success. And I knew he was able to take down Nicholas Dalby. It'll just be a matter of if he's able to take down Chaos in this one. So we will ride with Gabriel Bonfim. Okay, we're going to go with Gabriel Bonfim in this one. But Chaos certainly draws questionable taste in terms of if he can get a knockout victory here. Which actually, he is coming in off of momentum. But I already highlight Gabriel. We're going to ride with Gabriel Bonfim. It's 50-50. Oh, good thing I probably won't be watching this since I'll be watching Jimmy fight, who, of course, we have had on. You should listen to both of our episodes on the podcast. The event keeps on a rolling as we head to the men's. What weight class are they in? The flyweights. Oh, my gosh. We're going from welterweight. We're going from 170 to 125. As we get graced with a fantastic matchup between Rafael Estivam and Jesus Aguilar. Jesus Aguilar, man, he is on a rough patch. But maybe he can swing his momentum here when he takes on Rafael Estivam. Rafael M. Kappa Estivam is 12-0, undefeated. Jesus Aguilar, 11-2. 5'8 to 5'4, Rafael has 4 inches in height, and he has 7 inches in reach. Both men are in the orthodox stance. Jeez, Rafael, you are a big, big boy. big tall boy for this flyweight weight class. Rafael coming into this one -330 favorite. Goodness me. He is loaded. 28 years old from Brazil. He has 7 finishes in his 12 wins, 4 knockouts, and 3 subs. And he was above weight for his last fight out. He made his debut against Charles Johnson in November of 2023. So it's been a long time since we've seen Rafael in the UFC, dealing with some injuries last year. But he's back. He's hungry. And you know what? He used his grappling to beat Charles Johnson last time. We'll see if he uses his grappling to beat Jesus Aguilar this time. But I think this is going to be a competitive fight. Jesus +260 is the underdog. 28 years old as well. He's from Mexico. Of his 11 wins, 8 finishes, 1 knockout, and 7 subs. Both of his losses he's been submitted in. Now I do want to add, he's on a 3-fight winning streak. 2 of those are finishes. His one loss in the UFC is to Tetsuo Tara. Okay, this guy is super game. On the will win streak here. Coming off a round 1 guillotine choke of Stuart Nicol in August of 2024. Shannon Ross in 2023. He knocked out in 17 seconds. Whoo, here's the issue here. We've obviously had undefeated fighters losing every single matchup in 2025. The one thing I'm looking at is the height and reach. That 7-inch reach, especially at flyweight, I think is going to prove beneficial to Rafael Estevam. But, it's really tricky. This is excellent matchmaking by the UFC. I would have picked Rafael with no question had undefeated guys not been dropping left, right, and center. I mean, they're dropping like flies. We've had 10, maybe 11 guys this year already in the few events we've had lose their O in their record. I don't know if it's going to start with Rafael Estevam keeping the undefeated guys afloat, but I'm going to ride with him. I can't help it. I really can't help it. But Jesus Aguilar, he's super game. He's super competitive. But that 7-inch reach advantage is just speaking to me, especially when they're similar in size. This isn't like a Jose Johnson scenario where he is just completely bad at grappling. Rafael Estevam appears to be ready for the UFC. Next matchup up on the docket is one that came together last second as Jared Gordon will take on Masarjan Ruzaboyev. I think I'm saying that correctly. I apologize if I'm not. But Jared Flash Gordon and Masharban Black Jr. Ruzaboyev. What is up with this nickname, Black Jr. Ruzaboyev? 20-7 with a no contest for Jared Gordon. 24-1 for Maharshaban Ruzaboyev. They don't have any of Maharshaban's stats in for UFC. Wow. So Maharshaban, we don't know much about him, guys. We don't know much about him. All we know is he is from Uzbekistan. He's 28 years old. He has 20 wins with 17 finishes, 12 knockouts, and 5 subs. And he's on a 7-5 winning streak. 2 of his losses have came by sub. And he last fought in 2023. Maharshaban Ruzaboyev stepping in on short notice. As Jared Gordon was supposed to fight Cal Fernandez. But Cal getting injured, pulling out, in steps Maharshaban, who I don't know anything about. Jared Gordon, 36 years old from New York. 9 finishes in those 20 wins, 7 knockouts, and 2 subs. Of his 7 losses, he's been knocked out 4 times and submitted once. Jared, coming off a loss to Nasrat Haqparast in June, which is a very competitive fight. Could have gone either man's way. Good fight there. Before that, he fought in November of 2023, where he got a round 1 knockout of Mark Madsen. This is a tricky scenario where I have Jared Gordon, who I've seen fight, and I have Maharshaban, who I haven't seen fight. Now, Jared Gordon and Nasrat Haqparast had a beautiful battle. I don't know. This is pretty unbiased ground in the apex, and Maharshaban has a lot of finishes. So we're going to go with Maharshaban Ruzaboyev. Why not? We'll pick him. I don't know anything about him. He could be padding his record. He could absolutely suck. But I'm not a big fan of Jared Gordon. Nothing personal against Jared. It's just boring when he fights. Plus, that Paddy Pimblett fight, very much of a letdown. So we're going to go with Maharshaban Ruzaboyev. And we're going to say by round 1 knockout, just because I can. I can say round 1 knockout because, honestly, I can make any prediction I want. Because I am the breadwinner. No, what word am I thinking of? I make the decisions. That's what I'm trying to say. So Maharshaban Ruzaboyev, that's what we're riding with. Following that, we get our final women's matchup of the evening as the number, where's she at right now? 13th ranked woman strawweight, Angela Overkill Hill, takes on Ketlyn Souza. Ooh, Ketlyn Souza back in action. Nice to see. This should be a good competitive matchup here. Ketlyn's nickname, I wasn't going to say, but I might as well try. Esquintadina, close enough if you ask me. Angela Hill, 17-14, veteran of the game, the ultimate gatekeeper. She's better than Neil Magny. She's better than Neil Magny as a gatekeeper, let me tell you that. Ketlyn Souza, 15-4. Both women are 5'3", 64 inches, 63 inches, 1 inch in reach for Angela Hill. Orthodox hands for both these women. -125 for Angela, +160 for Ketlyn Souza. This matchmaking does not get much better than this. Let's check in with the 13th ranked Angela Hill, first, 40 years old, from New York City. Six finishes in her 17 wins, five knockouts, and one submission. She has two submission losses in her 14 career losses. Last time she won was May of 2024 when she got a guillotine choke of Luiana Pinheiro. Last time she fought was against Tabitha Ritchie, which she unfortunately lost in August. That one annoyed me. That was a really annoying loss for Angela Hill. She outstruck her. She was doing good on the feet, and then she'd get taken down. You're like, Angela, get back up. And she just couldn't get back to her feet. So back in action, Angela Hill, we already know her. This is year 11 for her in the UFC. She has been outstanding, and she's doing the best she's ever had in her career. And by the way, she's 40 years old. 4-2 in her last six. I mean, losses are to Mackenzie Dern and Tabitha Ritchie. Those are not too bad women to have losses to in your last six. So we are going to see how she does as she takes on the young, hungry, up-and-coming Ketlyn Souza. Ketlyn, 29 years old, from Brazil, 10 finishes in 15 wins, 8 knockouts, and 2 subs. All of her 4 losses, she has been finished in. So some by knockout, some by sub. You never know what you're going to get. Currently on a 2-fight winning streak, she had a massive win in September against Yasmin Jeraguy, submitting her at the Sphere in one of the actual lone good performances there. She dominated Yasmin personally. But Yasmin Jeraguy, who is a young 20-year-old, is much different than the seasoned veteran in Angela Hill. And Angela Hill, I said, is the ultimate gatekeeper. She's coming to bring it. She is the queen of apex fights. We are going to ride with Angela Hill, Angela Overkill Hill. And my one thing I'll add with Angela is when she fights, I can't help but root for her. I really, really can't. It's just a little guilty pleasure of mine watching Angela Hill fight. She's rarely in a boring fight, and she has been robbed so many times in her career. I think I mention this every time that she fights, is that those losses to Tisha Pennington, Michelle Watson-Gomez, and Claudia Gadella, I might give Tisha Pennington the nod, but she had two main event losses where she just should not have lost. It could have completely altered her career if the judges hadn't screwed her. So, Angela Hill, decision win. I think Ketlyn Souza is going to get a bit of a reality check in terms of skill level for the UFC rankings. In this matchup, we're going to go with Overkill, Angela Hill. Moving on to the men's featherweight division, as Conor the Controller Matthews takes on Jose Delgado. Jose, minus 230. Conor, plus 190 is the underdog. Conor Matthews, 7-2. Jose is 8-1, 5'11-5'8. Jose is 3 inches in height, and he is 2 inches in reach, 73-71. Switch stance for both of them. Ooh, you're going to be seeing some good exchanges here then when both fighters are in the switch stance. Conor Matthews, the underdog, 32 years old, from Massachusetts. 6 finishes in those 7 wins, 1 knockout, and 5 subs. He was on Dana White's Contender Series twice, decision loss, and then a was it decision win right here. Yes, big grappler. Made his debut against Dennis Bazucha in March of last year and got finished 20 seconds into round number 3. Conor is back though, looking for a win. He's hungry. He's pretty inexperienced, I'll say, for a 32-year-old with only what, 9 professional bouts. You know what? He can always turn around the tide here as he takes on Jose Delgado. Jose, 26 years old, on a 5-fight winning streak. He's from Phoenix, and all of his 8 wins have come by finish, 4 knockouts, 4 subs. He won on Dana White's Contender Series in August with a round 2 knee knockout. You already know we're going with Jose Delgado in this one. This is just from the last time when I picked Conor to beat Dennis Bazucha, and there's just a skill difference there. And I think Jose is going to bring this intensity, this charisma, and similar to Elijah Smith, he already has 1 loss, so he's not on fraud watch in terms of being an undefeated fighter. That's going to be Rafael Estevam on this card. But I am cautious. I am cautious of these lower-level ranked fights at featherweight. Conor Matthews, Jose Delgado, this is any man's fight, but I think Jose pieces him up, gets a round 2 knockout. I'm trusting you, Jose. And hey, you can even get a submission. He doesn't really care where it's at. He just loves to get the finish. Absolutely beautiful. Moving up in weight to the men's middleweight division, you're going to have a grappling affair here as Rodolfo the, oh my gosh, what's his nickname? Where is it? Rodolfo the Black Belt Hunter Vieira. Oh my gosh, such a beautiful, beautiful nickname. I love it. Takes on Andre Petrovsky. Rodolfo minus 215 is the favorite, plus 175. Andre is the underdog. Rodolfo 10-2, Andre 12-4. Both men are 6 foot. Both men have a 73-inch reach. Orthodox stance for Rodolfo, switch stance for Andre. These two are about as even as it gets. The only real difference you're going to see is Rodolfo is 35 and Andre's 33. I mean, truly, these two are about as even as it gets. Rodolfo coming into this one, of course, 35 from Brazil. 10 finishes in 10 wins, 1 knockout, and 9 subs. Very good. 1 career loss by submission, which was to Anthony Hernandez, I believe. So that's not too bad of a person to lose to. And he actually most recently beat Derek Brunson in a grappling match, November 17th. So how about that? Last time he was in MMA was a year ago in February when he beat Armin Petrosian with a arm triangle. Before that, he beat Cody Brundage with an arm triangle. Before that, he lost to Chris Curtis. Before that, he submitted Dustin Stolfus. I mean, this guy's an absolute savage. This dude's 35 years old, whooping youngins' butts. I absolutely love seeing Rodolfo Vieira fight, and I'm glad he's finally getting a fight, man. It's been so long. The one thing you're going to notice with Rodolfo, he is a one-dimensional fighter. Now, good for Rodolfo is he's taking on a guy in Andre Petrovsky, who is going to be a similar style as him as a grappler. Andre, 33, from Pennsylvania. He's actually stepping down short notice for Jacob Malkoon. Ironically enough, Jacob Malkoon was the last man that beat Andre Petrovsky. So Andre was kind of like, you know what? This guy's pulling out who beat me. I'm going to step in and prove I'm better than him. So he's in this one. 8 finishes and 12 wins, 4 knockouts, 4 subs. All 4 of his career losses have came by a knockout. Now, 2023 and 2024 was kind of a blend for Andre. Got a win in both of them, but he also got finished in both of them. Currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Last fought in September when he beat Dylan Budko. We're actually going to mention it about 2 fights right here. Andre, I was super high on, but after watching him fight Cody Brundage and Jacob Malkoon, I really lost a lot of hope in him personally as a fighter. I just don't know what it is. Actually, it wasn't Cody Brundage. He beat Cody Brundage. I'm thinking of Michelle Pereira. Michelle Pereira absolutely humbled him, and then Jacob Malkoon also humbled him. Jacob Malkoon really humbled Andre Petrovsky. This is going to be a grappling matchup. Andre would be a pretty good underdog, in my opinion, but I'm going to go with Rodolfo Vieira. He's the black belt hunter. I'm pretty sure Andre has a black belt, and Rodolfo Vieira is live by the sword, die by the sword. I think he gets a takedown on Andre, and even if Andre gets a takedown, I think Rodolfo's going to be throwing up arm bars, arm triangles. This dude is a submission master. I mean, go look at his Tapeology page. It's literally him in a gi, and he is just looking shredded as ever after getting a victory in a tournament. So we're going with Rodolfo Vieira. Happy to have him back in the octagon. Let's get into the final 3 fights of the evening. Actually, 4 fights. Wow, we get treated to a banger off the bat. As we head to the men's lightweight division, guys, keep these names on your radar. They are going to be in the rankings one day as Ismael Moreta Bonfim, that's right, the younger brother of Gabriel, takes on Nazim Black Wolf Sadikov. I love Nazim Sadikov, man. He's such a killer. Ismael, 20-4. Nazim, 9-1-1. 5'8 to 5'10. Nazim has 2 inches in height, but it is Ismael with a 2-inch reach advantage, 71-69. That gets him there. Orthodox stance with the right for Ismael. Southpaw with the left for Nazim Sadikov. -145 for Ismael, +120 for Nazim. The odds makers cannot make up their mind with this one. Let's start with Ismael Bonfim, 29 years old from Brazil, 13 finishes in 20 wins, 9 knockouts and 4 subs. All 4 of his losses are also by submission, ironically enough. Ismael started his UFC career out pretty good with a nasty knockout, one of the best knockouts of 2023 against Terrence McKinney, then got humbled when Benoit Saint-Denis submitted him in round number 1. Following that, fought once in May of last year when he took on Vink Pichel and beat him by unanimous decision, but it was one of those fights where it was almost like you really expected him to get the finish, and he couldn't get the finish. And it was very interesting to see Ismael Bonfim, this young, hungry 20-year-old, not being able to beat a guy in Vink Pichel who's past 40, so curious to see for this one. This is interesting as well for Nazim as the 30-year-old who is on a 9-fight winning streak after losing his first professional fight. He's from Brooklyn. Fights out of Brooklyn, actually. He was from Azerbaijan. 8 finishes in those 9 wins, 6 knockouts and 2 subs. He had 2 canceled bouts in 2024. He last fought in 2023 when he had a majority draw against Vyacheslav Borshev in a fight of the night. Other than that, beautiful work. Beautiful work. He's finished Terrence McKinney after losing round 1. He's had a fight of the night TKO win over Evan Elder, and he even beat Ahmad Hassanda with a nasty knockout on Davis Contreras series. Nazim Sadikov is a dog, but we just haven't seen him in a while. Okay, couldn't get a fight in 2024. It's been a while since he's last fought, but he does train with Marab and Aljamain Sterling. Okay, he trains with those boys out of, oh my gosh, where does Aljamain train out of? It's eluding me. It's eluding me somewhere in that New Jersey area is where he's from. Nazim is an absolute killer. Ishmael's an absolute killer. If you're looking at Fight of the Night, just based off of the fights on the card, this is my prediction for Fight of the Night. I think this is going to be a fantastic fight. Nazim's a little underdog here. I love picking him here. I'm going with Nazim Sadiqov, and I can even see him getting himself a little round two knockout. Okay, that's what I'm going to be going with this, a little round two knockout action for Nazim Sadiqov, but Ishmael Bonfim really pushes the pace right off the bat. I think both of these gentlemen are going to be hungry for the finish. I'm going to go with Nazim. This is another 50-50 matchup. The matchmakers have been doing a fantastic job this year in making fights. With that, okay, this is a matchup, which it's not going to be that exciting, but I'm really hoping one of these guys wins. Back in the middleweight division, as the Golden Boy, Edmund Shahbazyan takes on the Mindless Hulk, Dylan Budka, and I've never seen a fight set up more for Edmund to win, and of course, it'd be someone like Edmund to lose. Edmund is 13-5, Dylan is 7-4, 6'3 to 6', 3 inches in height for Edmund, and he has both 75-inch reach, orthodox stance, a switch stance. Wow, I thought that he had a bit of a reach advantage. I guess not. Edmund is minus 285. Dylan is plus 230. Edmund, 27 years old, from Las Vegas, Nevada. Of his 13 wins, 12 finishes, 11 knockouts, and 1 sub. Of his 5 losses, he's been finished 4 times, knocked out 3 of those times. So he has been submitted once. But Edmund, I mean, he's just had terrible luck. Terrible, terrible luck. This guy starts out his career a perfect 11-0, then runs into Derek Brunson, Jack Hermanson, and Nazardine Imavov, finally gets a win over an unranked guy, then gets destroyed by Anthony Hernandez, then beats another unranked guy, then loses to Gerald Meerschaert in a comeback win for Gerald Meerschaert. Only Gerald Meerschaert can be out here getting comeback wins over young up-and-comers. He's set up to win this one, though. Okay, Edmund is a striker through and through, and I'm really hoping he can get it done here as he takes on just a guy who I do not think is UFC caliber. And that's Dylan Budka, 25 years old from Ohio, 3 finishes and 7 wins with 1 knockout and 2 subs. Half of his losses he's been finished in, and I mean just atrocious performances through his first 2 UFC fights against Cesar Almeida, where he got knocked out in round 2, and against Andre Petroski, where he got out-grappled every single round, got taken down once in each round, and got controlled. Dylan Budka, not UFC caliber. Edmund Shahbazyan needs to prove he's still caliber. I mean, this dude's been fighting for 5 years. He's 27 years old. Was in the UFC when he was 22. Might have even been in the UFC when he was 20 years old. I mean, come on. Edmund, I'm going to be rooting for you. I think you'll get the knockout, but you never know. You never know. This is a striker versus a grappler, and Dylan Budka is about as one-dimensional as they come. When we talk about one-dimensional fighters, that's Dylan Budka. No hate, Dylan. No hate. I would always love to have you on your pod, but I'm just observing as a fan. I'm just observing as a casual watcher of the sport. Actually, I'm not a casual. I've graduated from casual a long time ago. But we're going to go with Edmund Shahbazyan getting his 12th career knockout, and I really hope he does. But it's in the apex. You never really know. With that, folks, we get into our co-main event, and it is fantastic. I really hope this fight does come to fruition as we head to the men's featherweight division as the number 10-ranked featherweight, Calvin Kattar, welcomes an unranked competitor into the fray in the Tasmanian Devil. Wait, is that his name? I should double-check. The Moroccan Devil. Glad I double-checked. The Moroccan Devil, Yusuf Zalal. Calvin Kattar, plus 310, is a huge underdog. Yusuf, a minus 400 favorite, is coming into this one as the guy to beat, clearly, which is crazy to think since Calvin Kattar is a former main eventer and is ranked number 10 in the division. Calvin, 23-8, Yusuf, 16-5-1, 5'11-5'10, 1 Jeanette for Calvin. Both men have a 72-inch reach, orthodox for Calvin, and switch stance for Yusuf Zalal. So basically similar, as you can see from this one. Let's start with Calvin. It's been a rough going for Calvin, guys. You know, it's been a rough few years. It's been a rough few years. Last win came in January of 2022. It's been 3 long years for Calvin. The 36-year-old is from Massachusetts. 13 finishes and 23 wins with 10 knockouts and 3 subs. Of his 8 losses, he's been knocked out once and submitted once. He was supposed to fight in September against Cal Nelson, but had to pull out of that fight. And now he gets graced with an even tougher competitor than Kyle Nelson. Calvin is just, you know, 3-on-3-fight skid. He's 1-4 in his last 5 fights, but I do just want to add some context. These losses, Max Holloway, Josh Emmett, Arnold Allen, and Aljamain Sterling. I mean, the toughest of the tough. He's been fighting killers since the get, truly since he joined the UFC. So this is going to be interesting as he's taken just about a year off, just about under a year after getting outgrappled by Aljamain Sterling. And he's back, but he has to take on a guy who was cut from the UFC, came back, has been on nothing but a roll. He's on a 6-fight win streak. All 6 of these wins are finished. And Yusuf Zalal could catapult himself into the top 15 at featherweight and even to the title picture by end of the year. Let's look at him. 28 years old, born in Morocco, now trains at Denver. The 6-fight win streak we talked about. All 6 of those coming by finish. 13 finishes and 16 career wins. 4 knockouts, 9 subs. This man's never been finished. Leaves the UFC. Okay, from 2020 to 2022, he goes 3-3 with a draw, gets cut. Leaves in 2023, gets 3 wins, wins the belt in some other promotion. Comes back in 2024. How about a round 2 rear naked choke of the Barry Quarantillo? Comes back in August. How about a round 1 rear naked choke of Jarno Ahrens? Then retires Jack Shore at UFC Edmonton with a round 2 arm triangle, gets a performance bonus. Yusuf Zalal is riding so much momentum right now. It is insane. It is insane how much momentum this guy is riding, and I'm here for it. Riding, as I should better say. I'm all here for it. And Calvin Kattar, I love you, man. I used to be such a fan, but plus 310 for Calvin Kattar. I would take that any day of the week if I wasn't so certain that Yusuf Zalal was going to get this one down. That's right, boys. I am more certain than ever that he's going to be winning this one. I got a little round 2 submission in the cards. Calvin just might be past his prime a bit. But I don't know if this is a fight that he's going to win. I'm here cheering for him. I'm going to be honest. This is one of those cards where there's certain fighters I'm going to be rooting for, and there's certain fighters I'll be rooting against. If Calvin Kattar or Yusuf Zalal wins, I'll be happy for either of them. But I'm just hoping for a good fight. And honestly, I think it's a pretty key. What am I trying to say here? So it's pretty evident we're going to be getting a good fight between both of these gentlemen. But Yusuf Zalal for Calvin Kattar should be a great co-main event. But it's only the co-main event. As we get to the men's main event, as the number 7th ranked middleweight contender in the world, the former men's title challenger, the vanilla gorilla, the killer gorilla, whatever you want to call him, Jared Cannonier, back in action. And he takes on RoboCop Gregory Rodriguez. That's right. Middleweight's the only division, I'm going to be honest, where I have seen more unranked contenders take on top 10 guys than any other weight class. It's actually crazy how many unranked competitors get chances against top 10 guys, but that just speaks to how deep the division is. Jared Cannonier, the killer gorilla, 17-8. Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez, 16-5. 6'3" to 5'11". Gregory's got 4 inches in height, but Jared has 2 inches in reach, 77-75. Switch stance for Jared, orthodox with the right for Gregory Rodriguez. Gregory is actually the favorite of this, -190. Jared +150 is currently an underdog. The odds will definitely even, but this is as 50-50 as you can get right now. Jared, 40 years old from Alaska. I believe he does train at the MMA lab in Arizona, though, where kind of Henry Cejudo trains and Sean O'Malley. I don't know, though. Says he's from Alaska. 12 finishes in his 17 career wins, 9 knockouts, and 3 subs. And of his 8 losses, he's been knocked out 3 times. Jared, been with the UFC since 2016. He's fought in at 3 different weight classes. We know his spiel. As of late, though, 2024 did not treat him kindly as he lost twice to Nazarene Imavov and Kyle Borralo. Dominated. I don't want to say dominated because it didn't feel like that, because truly Jared Cannonier put up a fight in both of those. But Kyle Borralo had his number. Nazarene Imavov was turning the tide. And I just think it's a changing of the guard at men's middleweight. That's what I just think is happening. And Jared Cannonier is getting caught in flux, and he's taking on, and look at the guys he's lost to, the number 1 ranked guy and the number 6 ranked guy. He also has losses to the number 5 guy, the number 4 guy. I mean, he holds a win over the number 2 guy, but that's about the best you can get there. Holds a win over the number 8 guy, and now he's looking to get a win over the unranked Gregory Rodriguez. But Gregory, he's coming for the throat. He's coming for a ranked spot. And how about that? If you win, you're the number 7 middleweight in the world, Gregory. I wish you the best of luck. The 32-year-old is from Brazil, but now lives in Florida. 13 finishes in 16 career wins, 9 knockouts, and 4 subs. Of his 5 losses, he's been KO'd 3 times. And I do want to say that Jared Cannonier still packs a punch. Gregory on this little win streak, 2 knockouts, and the July win over Christian Leroy Duncan, where he just grappled every round. I don't know what was going on there, but that was very out of character. He legit took down Christian Leroy Duncan, CLD, every single round, and just grappled him and just ground and pounded him. And it was kind of like, Gregory, I feel like you can get the finish if you really put it on. but I guess not. His only losses are to Bruno Ferreira in 2023, Armin Petrosian in 2022, and on Andreas Katerra series back in 2020. He's a whole new fighter since then. He's buffer. He has better hands. He has better movement. Gregor Rodriguez is an absolute savage. So who will we go with? I don't know. Jared Cannonier, last 2 years, has been more of a failed gatekeeper, especially last year. It's fun to pick Cannonier, but also I have not been having good luck picking veterans. For example, Israel Adesanya, where Nazarene was able to make the jump. So we are going to go with Gregory Rodriguez in this one. Plus, it's fun to think that Gregory could win over Jared Cannonier. I have a feeling someone's going out in this one. I have a feeling Jared's either going to get caught early and go down, or Gregory's going to realize that the top 10 guys hit a lot harder than the non-ranked top 10 guys. So I'm going to go Gregory just to be an optimist, but if Jared wins, good for him. Truly, I will not be mad if Jared Cannonier wins. I'll be cheering for both of these guys. Big fans of both of them, but I got to ride with RoboCop, Gregory Rodriguez. Some even call him Violent Obama. He looks like him, kind of. Gregory Rodriguez, best of luck to you. But, guys, those are all our predictions for UFC Vegas 102. Should be a good card. You know, I expect some very, very good fights on this card. Hopefully finishes, I'm really hoping. And it's not going to be too tough to top some of the stuff we've seen this year, but I don't know. Knockout of the year, submission of the year, fight of the year. It's still early. You can still get them on random fight nights like this one. Gentlemen, ladies, that's all I got for today's episode. Next time I see you, we'll actually know all the results of this card. Crazy enough. So, ladies and gentlemen, have a fantastic weekend. Have a fantastic week. Whenever you're listening to us, just know I love you. Thank you so much for the support. It means more than I could ever, ever fathom. I can't even put my emotions into words for you. I had a white monster today, and I think my heart might stop. But you know what? We're going to keep on pushing. And as always, I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.